doesn't mean it hasn't happened, of course, just that I wasn't witness to it. What you've built here is certainly fascinating. Strange, but fascinating. I wanted to interpret that as a positive. However, there was no way of knowing just what Deborah had meant by any of it. Maybe it was a hint she wouldn't kill me. Maybe it was assurance that I'd at least die for creating something unique. Deborah was both too experienced and too subtle for me to figure her out so easily, so the most I could do was keep trying my best and hope I'd showed enough potential to stay alive for another day. Two large vehicles, black and bearing government plates, pulled up to the curb right next to where we stood. Out of the one came Arch, and from the other came Bubba. Amy stuck her head out the passenger side window. "We called for a ride while on our way here," Lillian told me. "Thought that after a night like this, nobody would want to sprint all the way home." "Lillian, remind me of this at the next performance evaluation. You are clearly in need of a raise." I slipped into the car with Arch, purely because I knew he wouldn't initiate conversation, while the ride with Bubba and Amy would be raucous fun. We did have reason to celebrate, after all. We'd gotten a major artifact into safe-ish hands without a single innocent person getting hurt. The only non-serpentile who'd been injured was me, and those wounds were already gone. As we pulled away, I looked back up at the building where, right now, the thieves were probably being lined up in front of Gideon. He'd agreed not to be pointlessly cruel, as dragons largely seemed to be practical creatures at heart, so at least there was a chance that some of the serpentiles might survive. It was a minor comfort, true, but it was all I had to work with. A verdict at the trial. 1. Things calmed down after the incident with Gideon and the serpentiles, or at least remained at a level of excitement significantly beneath exploding cars and shootouts in the street. Life truly didn't seem as lively, although some of that had more to do with what was missing than a lack of trouble. Crystal had been gone for nearly 6 weeks by this point, and while we were still talking at semi-regular intervals, her absence was beginning to take a toll. Not on our relationship, as we were well accustomed to dealing with some distance here and there. It was a part of her career that I'd known I was getting into when I popped the question. No, the toll was on life around the manor in general. Without Crystal around, there was less trouble to be stirred up. We didn't have anyone convincing Charlotte to serve carbonated red wine during dinner, or firing off shots at the makeshift target range in the rear of the house at all hours of the night, or bursting through the front door yelling in either urgency or the hope of alerting us to raccoons having a cool brawl outside. Strange as it may be for someone like me to romanticize the idea of chaos, opposites do attract, and life without Crystal was reminding me of why I'd grown to love those strange behaviors as much as the woman who did them. When the day finally came that Arch joined us at our evening meal and delivered the news that Crystal's task was almost over, it required all the discipline I had not to cheer. Lillian muttered something about it having taken her long enough, but from the glowing smile on her face, I could tell she was excited about the return. Only Deborah had a subdued reaction, and it turned out that she had good reason for it.
"So soon? That's quite a turnaround, given the number of tasks she was handed. I must say I'm impressed by Agent Jenkins's efficiency. It appears her reputation was well earned. Unfortunately, that means my time with all of you is drawing short. I'll have to render my verdict before her return."
I glanced around the table, but no one seemed especially taken aback by the news. Crystal might not be happy about the idea of me being judged for my worthiness as a vampire. However, I don't think she'll interfere, especially not when you're here in an official capacity. She might get involved in the actual carrying out of the order if you opt to kill me,
Since you've researched her, I'm assuming that's not a surprise, but she'll let you do your job until then.
Remember, Fred, it's not a coincidence that I came here when I did, Deborah explained. My job was to see how you hold up on your own. That was why I waited until Agent Jenkins would be out of the picture for a prolonged period of time. Her presence influences you, as one would expect from a good partner. I wasn't tasked with seeing how you do as a couple. I was here to evaluate you as an individual. I trust you can understand why that was necessary.
When we'd first met, I probably wouldn't have gotten it. I didn't understand Deborah yet. I didn't comprehend the weight of the untold years that burdened her. She wanted to see how I would do alone, because when one took a long-term view of things, that was how she expected me to end up. Eventually, the ones around me would die or leave, and I'd be on my own, in charge of those who remained in my clan. I was the lone element she could count on being present in my life, so I was the only one Deborah had to ensure was capable of handling leadership. It wasn't a philosophy I was sure I agreed with, but I also couldn't say it was inherently wrong. In the end, it didn't really matter how well I understood the situation. My comprehension wasn't required. Only Deborah had to know exactly what was going on.
She's not back yet, Arch reminded us. They want Fred to meet her for the final phase of her trial in 2 days' time. I've been tasked as your official escort in and out of the Hollow Woods, since an agent is needed to access our entry points.
I assume bodyguards are still welcome.
The way Deborah said it, the words didn't feel like a question.
Normally, no, but it seems the representative of Crystal's trial was unexpectedly fine with you tagging along. They didn't even seek compensation for the exception.
Arch wasn't one to put too much of any emotion in his voice, so the threads of suspicion in his present tone stood out in glaring relief. Besides, I was admittedly not the most educated man when it came to dealing with the Fae, and even I knew they weren't the sort to give any ground without reason. I'd heard a few legends that negotiations between dragons and Fae could last decades, which was part of the reason those species rarely interacted with one another. Deborah finished chewing her bite of prime rib before delicately wiping her mouth.
I wouldn't imagine Hellebore has any reason to object to my presence. After all, we're old... friends might be the wrong word to use when discussing one's relationship with a Fae, but there is an amount of mutual respect between us. She was even kind enough to give Agent Jenkins a particularly long and time-intensive set of tasks so that I could have as much time as possible in making my decision.
In dealing with Deborah, it was easy to get lost in the polite banter and shared purpose, to momentarily forget that the person we were speaking with was very old and very powerful. She had survived countless eras and centuries for a reason, and it wasn't simply her raw strength. Deborah planned, thought, schemed, and prepared. That was who she was, and she'd never pretended to be anything else. That was why the news didn't shock me. Rather, it felt like finally seeing the last letters in a word search. Everything snapped into place, and I realized how obvious it should have been from the start.
You sent her away, probably to ensure you could get me to sign on to this whole endeavor in the first place.
To be clear, Agent Jenkins was always going to have to do this if she wanted to get married, Deborah corrected. You already knew I had coordinated with the Fae. Is it truly a surprise that we also had her tasked with an especially lengthy set of assignments? We simply waited for a useful opportunity and utilized it to its full extent. It would have been beyond us to convince Agent Jenkins to endure such trials of her own volition. In a way, Fred, you are the one who presented us with this opportunity. Until you proposed, she didn't seem to care much either way. You sent her on this quest. We merely made the most of it.
And one could argue that removing an agent we don't trust to follow the laws was a protective measure for her as much as it was for us. The agency is not a tyranny. They have rules, too, and consequences for ignoring them. Logical, well-reasoned, and perfectly spun. I'd expect nothing less from one of Deborah's explanations. Much as I wanted to be angry at her, the source of my irritation wasn't actually the situation as a whole. I could see Deborah's side of things. I understood why she would make those moves. In her place, I might well have done the same, as this was the method least likely to result in any violence. No, the flex of anger I felt centered solely on the fact that she'd forced Crystal and me to spend more time apart than was strictly necessary. In the context of two ageless lives, 6 weeks was a pittance, but I'd started to fear that the end could come sooner than either of us wanted. While she was a skilled agent, I was an accountant, getting in more and more over his head. Anger and annoyance wouldn't have done me any good, however, so I let both feelings fade into the background. There were much larger issues to concern myself with at the moment. Arch, can you give me a rundown of what we're looking at? Why am I supposed to attend? Where is this Hollow Woods? What is going to be expected of me when we get there? And are there any pitfalls I need to watch out for? I almost didn't catch it, but a stray glance had me looking at Arch just as his eyes flicked between me and Deborah. He thought she was rubbing off on me. Maybe she was, in some ways. I wasn't entirely on board with Deborah's dichotomy of power and weakness, but I also wasn't quite so terrified of growing stronger anymore. There was one place where she'd undoubtedly left an impact, and that was in my view of planning. Deborah had been spot on about me going into situations with far too little information or forethought. I was the weakest member of my group, and while I didn't mind that in itself, it meant I needed to be that much more prepared for any kind of trouble.
"I can't help with any of the ceremony stuff," Arch said. "The Fae are both strict on tradition and big on improvisation, so it fluctuates. There has to be a fair trial for this sort of situation, but what exactly the trial entails is up to the Fae who oversees it. As for pitfalls, just be careful what you say, and never make a promise around a Fae if you can at all avoid it. Although they aren't as pedantic about deals and language as Dracolings, oaths are something sacred to them. It's why Crystal has to jump through all these hoops to get out of a simple engagement."
That was good to know. I wasn't necessarily one to go around making empty promises left and right, but the mere fact that we were being called to deal with the Fae suggested that they wanted something from us. I'd be sure to watch my language until we knew for certain what that was. After a bite of his cooling dinner, Arch continued,
"Hollow Woods is easier to explain. There are places in this world where our lands and the Fae lands bump against each other. Crossover points, if you will. Our meeting spot is one such area, almost a neutral ground. The agency keeps all known locations under lockdown to ensure that no innocent humans wander through by accident, hence why you'll need me to enter. That works out well, though, as it saves me the trouble of having to find a reason to tag along."
With a mock gasp, Lillian pressed a hand to her mouth.
"Why, Arch, are you going out of your way to come with Fred? Careful. You keep this up and people might catch on that you actually care a little under that gruff exterior."
"Pure pragmatism," Arch countered. "If Fred dies, then I have to deal with a furious Crystal on the warpath. That seems like the sort of position that will occupy more time than I'd like to give. Besides, I'm not going along for him. I haven't spent this long training 2 new prospects to send them into the Fae lands without guidance."
I knew who he meant, of course. It was immediately obvious. What was more puzzling was why Albert and Neil would be coming along to these Hollow Woods. Luckily, Arch didn't force me to wait long for an explanation.
You all kept going off on tangents before I had a chance to finish explaining. But they don't want Fred the person. They want the House of Fred in attendance. That means all members, or it's an insult to the Fae. By the treaties, you aren't obligated to honor their request for your attendance. Crystal, on the other hand, is still under their thumb until this trial is rendered complete.
That was a complication I hadn't expected, although perhaps I should have. More members of my clan in play meant more leverage for the Fae to use against Crystal, if that was the route they intended to take. Without meaning to, I glanced over at Deborah, who was waiting for my gaze with a smile. We had 2 days' time until the meeting. How much preparation could she have made in that time? More importantly, how much was I capable of?
Let's call everyone in. They get to make their own choices on whether or not to attend. I'm not going to ask them to walk into something this dangerous without it being their decision.
If it's for Crystal, they'll show, Lillian said.
Even so, it's important that we ask. That was the easy part, the logical next step. Now, I had to figure out what we might be able to prepare that the Fae wouldn't see coming.
Also, let's reach out to the Clovers, Asha, Richard, and ask Amy to call up Cindy. Anyone who might have insight into dealing with the Fae gets tapped as a consultant. Once we have a decent idea of what we'll potentially be up against, we can start making plans.
Not going to call upon the mighty King of the West?
There was more than a simple question in Deborah's words, but I didn't have time to worry about it just then. Whatever her problem was, she could get in line.
Gideon isn't generally the helpful sort, and I can't imagine he would lower himself to serving as a consultant.
In truth, I knew he had no objection to the sharing of information, but the less close Deborah thought we were, the safer everyone would be.
We're sticking with the people we know and trust, the ones who give a damn about whether we make it back alive. Let's make some calls and get ready. Sounds like the House of Fred has an outing to prepare for.
2. Lillian was right. Even before I'd explained the entire situation to them, every member of my clan was ready to plunge headfirst into the Fae lands. Bubba jumped out of his chair so fast that he shattered it, though it was repaired before he sat back down, thanks to Charlotte. There was no hesitation in anyone in this group, not when it came to one of our own. By the time we set out, 2 days later, I was almost grateful to have something to do other than talk about the Fae and strategies for dealing with them. Arch booked a pair of armored agency SUVs, one driven by him, the other piloted by Deborah. In total, we had me, Deborah, Arch, Bubba, Albert, Neil, Amy, and Lillian, who was holding a small model of Charlotte Manor. The model had been Charlotte's idea and creation, since she couldn't very well attend in person. The Fae were sticklers for the rules, but since the model was made from the same materials as the manor itself and enchanted by the Clovers to conduct Charlotte's voice, we hoped it would count as her attendance. Despite the normally gregarious crew, our vehicle was largely silent as we made our way far from the town of Winslow and neared the Colorado border. I had wound up in the SUV with Deborah, Bubba, Amy, and Lillian. Neil had needed a lot of room in the other car to spread out and prepare his spells. Plus, Albert had to ride with his sword in his lap, which almost took up another seat. Everyone but Deborah had their eyes turned out the windows, minds on what came next. In our 2 days' time, we'd done all we could. Research on the Fae, rumors of how these sorts of trials generally proceeded, any kind of protection we could prepare. Much like vampires and most other parahumans, the Fae had a metal allergy, only theirs wasn't to silver. Their magic, their realm, was different than ours, so it reacted to a different material, specifically iron. Unfortunately, Arch had informed us that the Fae would be checking for such substances when we entered the Hollow Woods. They weren't keen on allowing iron into their realm, and with good reason. Being unable to walk in holding weapons of pure iron left us in a weaker position than we might have liked, although, in honesty, I was a little glad we couldn't take that route. Strolling in with Fey poison in hand sent a very strong message, the sort that might completely remove diplomacy from the table. I still had hope that this might be resolved on peaceful ground. No matter how fearsome the Fey's reputation might be, we would still be dealing with just one person, a single being who might have greater compassion or decency than the rest of their kind. If that seems overly optimistic, do try to remember that in spite of the way vampires were viewed, I'd learned that some of them were quite capable of loyalty, kindness, and decency. If we could meet the Fey equivalent of Lillian, heck, at that point, I would probably take a Fey Deborah, then there was hope the day would end well. Eventually, our vehicles rumbled to a stop. We were on a dirt road, miles from the highway and hidden from view by the local vegetation. In front of us was an unassuming concrete cube, a minimalist bunker that could have been left over from the Cold War. Arch walked up to it without wasting a moment, shoved a giant key into the lock, and twisted with some effort. The door gave way, creaks like screams rising with every inch it gave, until it finally revealed the interior. I'd thought I was braced for anything, but it turned out I was ill-prepared to stare into a small bunker and see an expanse of mostly barren trees stretching out in all directions. "You could have just given us the key," Lillian said, while the rest of us stared inside with reactions that ranged from curiosity to shock. "Enchanted." Arch's reply was a grunt, although he seemed more annoyed than winded from hauling open the sizable door. "Anyone other than the agent who was given the key tries to use it, and all you'll find on the other side is an empty bunker with a case of old beer. Getting back is easier, since we don't have to worry about the Fey wandering through." The Fey, I had learned over the past few days, were technically allowed to enter our lands, but rarely chose to do so. The Fey lands were their home, and they preferred them to our realm. However, occasional crossover did occur. Sometimes it resulted in love, or at least sex, which accounted for the existence of half-Fey like June and September Willowbrook. Their kind was rare for a reason, though. Mostly, the Fey kept to their own lands, and humans, along with other parahumans, stayed in ours. "Remember, swords and weapons stay holstered unless you have a reason to draw them." I'm not sure I'd ever describe my voice as forceful, but on occasion, I could at least manage a passable veneer of authority. This was just such a moment. I wanted to make sure my entire clan stayed clear on our strategy. "We approach this with diplomacy first, and we will hold that stance for as long as we can." They all nodded, except for Deborah and Arch, but then again, they weren't members of my clan, so my instructions didn't necessarily pertain to them. The most I could hope was that they would go with what the House of Fred had decided, at least for a little while. One by one, we filed through the door, making our way into the forest within. A wave of smells caught my attention first, the scent of flora that hadn't been there seconds prior. Stranger still, several of these scents were entirely new, odors I had never experienced before in life or undeath. In the distance, I could hear creatures moving about as my ears reflexively listened for any potential threats. I also took note of the sound of metal jingling from not far off. Turning, I found myself staring at a pair of guards who hadn't been there moments prior. Both were clad in gleaming armor with vibrant blues and greens woven between the plating. In the past, I've described both June and her brother September, Tem, as Crystal called him, as inhumanly beautiful, their near-flawless features touched by something otherworldly. With the guards, there was far more than a touch. They were so perfectly sculpted They almost seemed alien. I had no idea what gender they were, or whether this variety of Fae even possessed such a thing. There were many kinds of Fae, just as there were many types of parahumans, and different types had different aspects and roles they fulfilled. These were apparently meant for speed or stealth, given the suddenness of their appearance, and I was sure they had ample more talents that we had yet to discover. One of them spoke, and with those words, I felt like there was a song in the forest, though no bird sang so much as a note.
"You are the House of Fred."
House of Fred, along with Deborah of the Blood Council and Agent Arch Davenport as escort, I announced, using the same clear, respectful tone I did in most professional settings.
"You were expected, and we welcome you to these in-between lands."
The speaking Fae stepped slightly closer, giving us a careful sniff.
"There is but one issue. A whiff of iron clouds the scent of that one. Not pure, yet iron all the same."
An armored finger pointed at Amy, who looked around briefly as though she were confused. Glancing down at her wrist, she thumped herself in the temple, then peeled off a small bracelet.
"Sorry, got this as a gift a long time ago. I completely forgot there was iron in it. May I throw it back through the door to the other side?"
Our speaking guard stood back and waited. Amy went ahead and chucked the bracelet through, then waited as Arch carefully pulled the door shut again, sealing us off from the world in which most of us had spent our entire lives.
"With the iron removed, you may proceed."
The guard motioned behind him to where a path that hadn't previously existed was winding along.
"Follow this trail. It will lead you to your destination. Do not stray from this path. Hellebore has ensured that you may travel it safely. Step away, and no such assurance exists."
Both Fae stepped back toward the woods and vanished from sight. I caught a slight jingle of metal as they moved, and then nothing. Given how much armor they'd been wearing, it was incredible that they could move so silently. Or perhaps they used enchantments. Anything was on the table now that we had crossed over into a land overflowing with magic. There was little to say as we walked down the path, Arch in the front and Deborah bringing up the rear. Our nerves were all on the edge, but Hellebore's promise held true. Despite a few rumblings and loud thudding steps from within the woods to either side, nothing approached our path. We kept walking for quite some distance. It was impossible to tell how long, with unfamiliar stars overhead, although the enormous moon did provide ample light for those of us who lacked night vision. I caught Bubba glancing up at the huge white half-circle in the sky, much larger than any moon I'd seen before. If it were full, would he be feeling the urge to transform? I wasn't sure how this realm's celestial bodies influenced us as parahumans, and I certainly didn't plan to stay until sunrise to find out. Finally, we rounded a cluster of trees and found ourselves staring at what might once have been some kind of arena. It looked as though it had been plucked from a picture book of the Middle Ages, the sort of place where one might expect to find knights holding a tournament. Some of it was in disrepair to the point of crumbling, while other areas looked as though they'd been built the day before.
"Strange things happen in these crossover points," Arch reminded us, "when two realms with their own magic and rules smash against one another. Unexpected outcomes can occur."
It didn't completely explain how an arena had ended up here in various stages of disrepair. Then again, I wasn't sure there even was an explanation for that to be had. As I'd learned when negotiating with Cindy last year, when dealing with magic, one had to accept the reality they were working with, rather than waste time hunting for an explanation that didn't exist. The structure was here, the path led to it, and that was all we needed to know. We arrived, stepped through the open front gate, and onto the floor of the arena.
Weapons lined the walls, some new, some falling apart like the building itself. Seats dotted the raised areas around us, all of them empty. As my eyes scanned, I caught a hint of movement. Following the shadow, I found myself looking upon what I presumed to be a seat of power for whoever oversaw this place and its goings-on. I made that judgment from the fact that it was visibly bigger than the others and had a cushion rather than any gaudy, ornate decoration. Besides, once I found the throne, my attention was immediately captured by its occupant. She was tall, taller than any other fae or half-fae I'd met thus far. Her hair was white and blue, and sometimes both or neither, and if that sounds confusing, then don't even ask me to try to accurately describe the hues of her eyes. They were clear gems, perfect windows into the deepest days of winter, ice and snow and wind all condensed into a pair of irises. Her gown of silver and blue fit her well, accentuating more of the unnatural perfection I was growing to associate with the Fae. From her perch, she looked down on all of us, and when she spoke, it sent chills through every one of us that still had warm blood in our veins. "Good evening, House of Fred. I am Hellebore, representative of the Court of Frost. Thank you for joining me on this sacred occasion. Please, ready yourselves. As soon as Agent Crystal Jenkins arrives, it will be time to start."
3. Start what, exactly? I took a careful step forward, aware of Hellebore's strange eyes watching my every movement. "We came at your summons as a show of good faith, but now that we are here, would you mind explaining why we were needed?"
"You were asked here because you are the one she intends to wed, and your clan was brought along because they are an extension of you. Agent Jenkins has endured much to win her freedom. The burden for such a task must not be hers alone, however. Some tests must be faced together."
Ominous, but not a direct threat. It was about on par with what I'd expected. Even in myths, the Fae were hardly renowned for their upfront nature. Still, Hellebore hadn't directly said we were there to die or spill blood, so part of me was holding out hope for a peaceful option instead. I didn't have to wonder for very long. Whether it was incredible timing or, more likely, some sort of magic, our arrival came a few minutes before a pair of women stepped into the arena from the other side. At a glance, I almost didn't recognize either. They appeared wildly different than they had 6 weeks ago when we'd said goodbye inside of Charlotte Manor. Their clothes were unfamiliar and dirty, mud caked their faces, and Crystal's hair looked to be a couple of inches shorter than it had been. It was also ragged, like she'd hacked a chunk away with a knife. June was hauling an enormous canvas sack with a dried red stain on the bottom.
"Heart of a rampaging winter wolf, as requested," Crystal snapped. "Now, give us the last task so I can go home to...
Freddy?"
Her last words turned from fierce to stunned as Crystal took notice of us all standing around in the arena. I gave a small, reserved wave in her direction.
"Hi there. Hard day at work?"
That was about all I got out before she raced across the arena and slammed into me, lips first. Under normal circumstances, I would have felt tremendously awkward about such an intimate display of affection in public, but I had missed her greatly as well. So overjoyed was I to finally see Crystal again that my embarrassment at our display was merely uncomfortable rather than crippling. After some time, enough for more than a few awkward coughs to be hacked out around us, she finally pulled back.
"What the living fuck are you doing here, Freddy? And why did you bring the whole gang along?" Although the question was technically directed at me, Crystal's head was already turning toward where Hellebore was standing, waiting to be addressed. "What's the deal here? My business is my own, and always has been. I was the one who agreed to marry Tem. I'm the one who wants out of it. The trial is mine, Hellebore, aided only by the contract's witness. My fiancé and his clan have nothing to do with it."
"What a thing to say. You've gone through all of this, so many dangerous tasks, so many perilous feats, all for the right to marry this man. Do you not think it fitting that he be asked to prove even a fraction of the same dedication?"
Hellebore didn't raise her voice as she responded. She didn't need to. Despite the distance from us, every word was sharp and clear. Crystal kissed me again, gently this time, and whispered in my ear, "Don't take this the wrong way." Then she spun around, facing Hellebore with a furious glare, and took two heavy steps forward.
"You're wrong, Hellebore. I love Freddy, I truly do, but he's not the reason I did all this. The truth is, I've known we were going to have this dance since the day I caught Tem cheating on me. I avoided it for a long time because it was a part of my past I wasn't ready to face. Freddy just gave me the push I needed to remember that one bad turn doesn't define an entire life, especially when that life's as long as ours. I'm the one who wants my full freedom restored. I'm the one who decides what person I'll marry. And yes, I fully intend to marry the man I love, but make no mistake, I came here to fight for my freedom because it is mine, not because I suddenly had a use for it."
I could see why she might have been concerned. Self-assurance was hardly one of my strong points, and there were many ways I could misconstrue that kind of statement. However, part of why Crystal and I worked as a couple was that we understood one another. She loved me dearly, but Crystal also loved her freedom. The idea of having part of it bound by the Fae was never going to sit well. Our engagement was incentive to tackle something she was always going to have to do.
"Well, that's hardly a wild declaration of love, now is it?"
Hellebore was unmoved by her words. I wasn't entirely sure what it would take to move a being like that, and I truly hoped we weren't going to have to find out.
"Practical reasoning, though. It's a pity you are so set on not wedding September Willowbrook. With a few decades to cool that temper of yours, you might have made a valuable asset to the Fae."
A snicker rose from behind us, and with a shock, I realized the source. Arch, of all people, had thrown a hand over his mouth to cover the brief fit of laughter. After a moment, he composed himself and addressed the shocked stares of the group.
"My apologies. I couldn't help myself. The idea of a few mere decades tempering an agent like Crystal? Again, sorry for the rudeness."
It might have been my imagination, but I was pretty sure I saw a flicker of annoyance mar Hellebore's features. Her inhumanly perfect face was hard to read, but I trusted my frustration radar. Given the crowd I spent my time with, there had been ample occasion for me to both hone and use it. Hellebore didn't like being laughed at. She was proud. While that didn't help me much in the moment, there was no telling what details might end up being useful down the line.
"Yes, perhaps taming one like her in such a short time is ambitious. Luckily, ambition is not a crime in the Court of Frost."
Hellebore quickly recovered herself, and I didn't like the gleam in her eyes as she stared down at us.
"Very well, Agent Jenkins. You have requested an explanation, and I shall now provide it. For the final test of your trial, I wish to see how well you and your betrothed do when pushed to the edge. In the crucible of battle, one's true spirit emerges. Let us see whether you two can stand together, or if you'll fall alone. We both know I lack the necessary power to kill you outright, Agent Jenkins. But for this task, there is a special condition. If you are injured enough to call forth the devil inside, then your trial will be deemed a failure. Other than that, you need only survive until the onslaught is quelled.
Objection!
June was at Crystal's side in a blur. I'd forgotten how quick she could be. June might even be a match for Deborah's speed.
The Court of Frost may not assign tasks that are impossible to complete. All tests must be passable. It is the law of our lands. You would demand she fight stripped of her powers? That is more than can be rightfully asked.
Impossible?
Hellebore placed a hand on her chest as though she'd been wounded.
What a ridiculous notion! Did I not permit her betrothed to bring forth the entirety of his clan? How can one argue that I have presented an insurmountable task by stripping one agent of her powers while filling her ranks with allies? I sense Aetherian, mages, vampires, even a weapon of destiny. The other agent, however, is not a member of the clan, and as such will not be permitted to fight.
Well, crap on cracker. I'd really been hoping she would forget to exclude Arch, even if that was a flimsy dream. We did still have one ace up our sleeve, though. No sooner had the thought crossed my mind than Deborah piped up from my side, addressing Hellebore directly.
You know that I've been sworn to protect the life of Frederick Fletcher until the Blood Council renders judgment. I trust there are no objections to seeing our evaluation process through to the end.
To my surprise, Hellebore respectfully nodded.
Of course. The Court of Frost recognizes the authority of the Blood Council. You may fulfill your duty and keep him alive as long as is needed. But unless I am mistaken, there is no such protection or assessment for the rest of the clan. They would not be yours to keep alive.
Correct. The rest of them are fair game, Deborah replied.
What?
I jerked around, meeting her eyes with a glare.
We had a deal. I submit to judgment. The rest of my clan stays safe.
She stared right back, waiting. Her silence forced me to search my memory to recall the exact wording of the contract we'd signed. It never promised safety to my clan, only that the Blood Council wouldn't be the ones to kill them if I failed my assessment. Hellebore wasn't part of the Blood Council, but still, we'd been together for 6 weeks. Did she really not care at all whether the others lived or died? Or maybe it wasn't that at all. Perhaps her hands were bound, just like Arch's. If that were the case, she could have seemed a little less upbeat about it.
I see. You'll keep me alive, but the rest are on their own.
Not ideal, not ideal at all. We'd just had our strongest fighters either limited or taken out of the fight entirely. As it stood, the only agent working at full capacity would be June, and I didn't imagine that even she could single-handedly protect this many of us.
I hope you're feeling limber, Deborah, because I plan to do all I can to help my clan in whatever ways I am able.
My declaration was met with an unexpected smirk.
Good, Fred. That's exactly the way a clan leader should think.
From the other side of the arena, I noticed movement. Something was coming through the same door Crystal and June had used. A lot of somethings, actually. Many of them quite large, from what I could make out. It was a strange menagerie. Living flora, animated ice sculptures, human-shaped hunks of wood. I'd never seen an army quite like it, and unfortunately, army definitely felt like the correct word to use. There were so many of these unnatural soldiers making their way into the arena that I quickly lost count.
Magical constructs, Crystal announced to the group. Fueled by fey magic, with the same weaknesses and strengths, but not alive. They're lifeless shells.
It's the same as breaking a training dummy. A ripple of ease ran through the group. None of them had felt comfortable with the idea of casually taking a life. They wouldn't have been in my clan if they were. Empty vessels, mercifully, were another matter entirely. Without moral conflict, they would have no need to hold back. It was a curiously kind gesture to make in our direction. I'd expected Hellebore to exploit our weaknesses. No sooner had the thought run through my mind than June's words echoed in my ears. The task couldn't be impossible. That was the law of the court. Forcing us to kill might have qualified as a step too far. Still, I was by no means happy with the situation. We were in a tight spot, and constructs or no, I wasn't one with a proclivity toward violence. We had a chance, at least. The laws of the Fae had given us that much. Safe on her perch, Hellebore raised a hand overhead. The final task is simply to survive. If my conditions are met, Agent Jenkins will be released from her contract. If any of the limitations are violated, this task will be considered a failure, and she may attempt another, after we clear away the dead, of course. We all tensed. The fray was about to start, and there was no way of knowing what sort of madness would break out when it did. Lifting her hand a few inches higher, Hellebore's voice came forth, burning in our ears. The final task of Agent Crystal Jenkins's trial before the Court of Frost begins now. Hellebore's hand dropped like a stone, the army of constructs surging forward at her command. At the same time, I was just barely able to recognize a flash of metal before surging pain carved into my back. From the moment I'd first signed her contract, part of me had been waiting for Deborah to stab me in the back. I just hadn't expected her to be so literal about it. And I certainly hadn't expected her to use a silver dagger. 4. I had to make a snap decision. Either I played possum and left my clan to fight on their own, or I showed Deborah that silver didn't weaken me like it was supposed to. Tempting as it was to hop back up and reveal my secret, there wouldn't be any point to it yet. Deborah didn't need silver to stop me. She could break my legs with as little effort as one would snap a carrot. This was symbolic, and until I understood what she was trying to accomplish, I couldn't work around her. I would have the opportunity afforded by surprise exactly one time and one time only. I had to use it carefully. Dropping to one knee, I let out a tense scream, but didn't fully collapse. Deborah would have read every file. She would know about my silver-holding contest with Petra of the Terva clan, and so she would expect me to be capable of toughing out the pain to at least some extent. Turning, I tried to look as betrayed as possible. It wasn't much of a stretch, in all honesty. Despite our roles, I'd grown fond of Deborah. She was one of the few older vampires who had given me hope there was a way to hang on to my humanity even as I aged. I thought you were my bodyguard. Oh, I still am. No change in Deborah's tone, no reaction to my expression. This was all just part of the job. No wayward lump of animated ice will take you out of the fight. But I'm also here to assess you as a leader, Fred. It's part of why Hellebore agreed to set up the final test like this. I have seen a lot from you so far. I know you care for your clan and your community as a whole. I know that, in terms of diplomacy and inter-para-human relations, you may be capable of making inroads the rest of us would never imagine. I know your clan loves you and trusts you and would likely follow you right into hell if it were needed. What I haven't gotten to see yet is how you handle real, deadly pressure. Can you lead them? Can you see them through to the other side of this conflict in safety? She hunkered down, meeting my eyes as the sounds of nearby battle rose up. I could hear Neil shouting magical words and the ring of metal as Albert's sword came free.
For what it's worth, this is usually the hardest task we give to the clans being assessed. Stripping a leader of their physical power forces them to lean entirely on the sense in their heads and the trust of their clan. Somehow, I think you might be better prepared to handle this than most of the others I've tested. That was actually a fair point. I'd never been one to lean on my vampire strength to see things resolved. While I didn't have much in the way of tactical experience or strategic planning, I had faith in my clan. They were strong, each and every one of them. If this fight could be won, which seemed to be the case, then I knew my friends would find a way to do so. Looking away from Deborah, I assessed the battlefield. Crystal had pulled a gun and was blowing limbs off moving sculptures and humanoid plants, leaving them flailing on the ground. Not far off, June had produced a pair of daggers and was making short work of the enemies Crystal crippled. The two of them were coordinated and flawless, tearing a swath through the enemy's numbers. I could only imagine what sort of destruction they could wreak if Crystal had been allowed to tap into her powers. Neil and Albert were clustered together, fighting nearly back to back. A shield of dark energy, like Albert had employed against the Serpentiles, kept Neil protected while Albert swung the blade of the unlikely champion for all that he was worth. The weapon was a potent tool, sundering any construct foolish enough to get within its path. Iron and silver were useful when the occasion demanded, but Albert's sword was a power unto itself. Farther off, Amy was sitting atop a giant burning horse, lobbing bottles that exploded moments later into groups of constructs at a time. The steed, no doubt Bubba using one of Amy's potions, stampeded around, crushing whatever he could beneath those powerful hooves. Ice shattered and plants caught flame as he thundered through them. Lillian was guarding his flank, darting about and smashing anything that tried to take a direct run at Bubba's backside. Near them was Arch, standing patiently, the small model of Charlotte Manor safely in his hands. They were all powerful, focused, and dangerous, and they were losing. From my point of view, I could see more of the battlefield than they could. I could clock just how many of the constructs were rising back up, remaking themselves even after being wounded. I was able to track the swollen numbers of our enemy, see how many were pushing in on the pockets my friends had managed to clear. Soon, the army would overwhelm them. Maybe not everyone. There was real power here, after all. Some would find a way to survive. Unfortunately, that wasn't good enough. I'd brought my entire clan here, and I'd be damned if we were going to leave without every last one of them. Our biggest problem was putting the constructs down for good. Albert's sword took the life right out of them, and June was gradually slicing them fully apart, but too many were being injured instead of destroyed. We needed something to weaken them, to make every hit count all the more. There was only one substance that could do that for us. Iron. I'd really, really hoped that it wouldn't end up coming to this, but one doesn't make contingency plans without the willingness to use them. I had a hunch you might be involved in this. My words didn't seem to shock Deborah, and that was absolutely okay. Words weren't the surprise we had in mind. After all, you admitted to being friends with Hellebore and having a hand in Crystal being gone for so long. Because of that, we decided not to clue you in on every detail of our game plan for today. A wise move, Deborah commended. I hope you've made your secret tactics good ones. The tide of battle is not currently on your side.
Then let's change that, shall we?
I lifted myself a little higher on my knee, raising my voice to make sure it was heard.
They were counting on me for the signal, trusting me to fully understand our situation before we exposed our secret. I hoped I was right, but even if I wasn't, it was still time. Better to try and be wrong than simply wait for failure to wash over us.
Lillian! Albert! Time for the arsenal!
My command echoed across the battlefield, followed quickly by Lillian muttering, "Shit! I knew he was going to say that!" She started to move, and as she went, I lobbed more instructions to the rest of our friends. We'd have to coordinate this if we wanted to pull it off.
"Amy, steer Bubba toward Neil and Albert, then put Neil on Bubba's back. Neil, defend for all you're worth. Crystal and June, go help cover them. Albert is going to need room to work. Hurry!"
Some part of me hadn't really expected them to heed my words, yet they all did without pause. Each of them flew into motion, doing exactly as instructed. Even Crystal and June, though both looked thoroughly confused. They could tell we had something up our sleeves, even if they didn't yet know what it was.
"Bringing them all together in a single area. Consolidation of forces," Deborah surmised. "Not a terrible thought, although it means the Fey army only has to funnel their attacks onto one point. Your clan will still be overwhelmed."
"A bit of advice, if I may offer it to one so much more experienced. You know more about the world, about living as a vampire, about being a parahuman. Honestly, there's virtually nothing you don't seem to be more informed about than I am, with the possible exception of tax law. However, on this count, you would do well to take careful note. You do not have a better understanding of what my clan can do. I know these people like family, and if you're ready to count them out, then you truly don't grasp just how dangerous they really are."
Deborah considered my reply for several seconds. "Good speech, solid sentiment, but unless your clan can do something soon, those were nothing more than pretty words."
Everyone had finally managed to converge. Amy hurriedly yanked Neil onto Bubba's back, while Crystal and June carved out a small perimeter. In the center, Albert and Lillian had at last made it to one another. The time had arrived. As long as the others could hold the line, we had a chance.
"Do you know what makes my clan so dangerous, Deborah? It isn't just the bond that exists between us, though that is something quite powerful indeed. Nor is it the raw strength of our clan as a whole. I wouldn't even consider our alliances with prominent members of the parahuman community to be our scariest aspect. No, what makes these people special is that they are strange, misshapen for the roles they were meant to fill. Any of them could have a more mundane life, aligned with the traditional power structures that would keep them safe. Instead, they threw their lot in with me, an accountant who has no business or experience leading any sort of organization, let alone this. That's why they're dangerous."
I could already see Albert lining up his strike. He would probably only get one chance to do this properly. After that, things were going to get much riskier than they already were, and that was saying something. He could do it, though. I had faith in Albert. I knew how hard he'd been training for a moment exactly like this one.
"Because they're followers?" Deborah asked.
"Because they're goddamn lunatics. Each and every one, crazy as the night is long. And that means they come up with some truly insane ideas."
With a mighty swing, Albert whipped his sword around and sliced cleanly into his target, Lillian's stomach. 5. Deborah stiffened in a rare moment of shock. Finally, this was a move she hadn't seen coming. I grimaced as I watched Lillian plunge her own hands into her gut, wincing through the pain to pull out the first of several plastic-lined objects. She tossed it to Crystal, who yanked off the plastic to reveal a small dagger. Instantly, the constructs around her drew back. They could already tell what the weapon was made from. Iron.
dangerous, deadly iron had been smuggled into the lands of the Fae. The tension in Deborah faded as understanding set in.
I see. You hid the iron inside an undead stomach cavity, where not even a Fae's senses would catch it. That was why Amy wore the bracelet when we first entered, to establish a reason why the faint whiff of iron might follow us, just in case. I suppose my question is how you knew Lillian would be the one still in play by this point.
We didn't. I've got a supply in my stomach as well.
Thankfully, we hadn't needed to do something as troublesome as swallowing the weapons whole. One of the many upsides to having a necromancer in the clan was his ability to work magic on the undead. A spell to put us under and a few to put the tools in place had made the process relatively painless. Of course, it was the kind of thing one could only do if they were willing to go under and trust their very life to a member of their clan. That was why I'd felt confident that it was a plan worth trying. As a rule, I'd found any strategy that hinged heavily on vulnerability and trust was one that few other para-humans seemed to consider. Amy also had the